From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. On August 21st, then-Bradley Manning was sentenced to 35 years for leaking more than 700,000 classified documents. The next day, another headline, an announcement to the world. Bradley didn't want to be Bradley anymore. He was she, and she was Chelsea. That announcement and the reactions that came with it put Chelsea Manning and a whole reality front and center, the reality of the complexity of gender identity. This hour on Point, we talk with transgender Americans about that life, their reality. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What was your reaction to Manning's announcement? What about overall? Are you open to this complexity, this reality? Here was the sound, the announcement, as Bradley, now Chelsea Manning, made clear through his attorney, a statement through his attorney brought to the Today Show. Here for the first time the country hears it, Savannah Guthrie at the Today Show reading the statement of now Chelsea Manning.
As I transition into this next phase of my life, I want everyone to know the real me. I am Chelsea Manning. I am a female. Given the way that I feel and have felt since childhood, I want to begin hormone therapy as soon as possible. I also request that starting today, you refer to me by my new name and use the feminine pronoun.
And here was Chelsea Manning's attorney, David Combs, explaining that announcement.
I think the ultimate goal is to be comfortable in her skin and to be the person that she's never had an opportunity to be.
Never had the opportunity to be. How would that work out? Hormone therapy in the offing for Chelsea Manning. Not clear if the Army, the government in prison in Fort Leavenworth will be helpful with that. Once again, here's Chelsea Manning's attorney, David Combs.
As far as the hormone therapy, yes. I'm hoping Fort Leavenworth would do the right thing and provide that. If Fort Leavenworth does not, then I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure that they are forced to do so.
For a lot of Americans, this in itself was an education. We hope to deepen that education a little bit today. We have two transgender guests with us, and we'll have a wise observer of life's complexities with us as well. Joining us now from Chicago is Deirdre McCloskey, a much-honored professor of economics, history, English, and communication at the University of Illinois at Chicago. Deirdre was born Donald McCloskey. She was married for 30 years and father of two children when she transitioned from male to female at the age of 53. She wrote a book about it called Crossing. Deirdre McCloskey, welcome to On Point. Thank you very much for being here.
Hi, how are you, dear?
Wonderful. Nice to have you. With us from Omaha, Nebraska is Ryan K. Salins, LGBT rights advocate. Ryan was born Kimberly Ann Salins. He transitioned from female to male in 2005 when he was 25. Wrote about it in a memoir, Second Son, Transitioning Toward My Destiny, Love, and Life. His company, Ryan Salins, Inc., consults higher ed, healthcare, nonprofit organizations on LGBTQ issues. Ryan Salins, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have both of you with us. Ryan, let me come first to you. When you heard the news on now Chelsea Manning, what were you thinking about what this fellow American had just come through and what they were telling all of us? She was telling all of us.
Well, I can say that my heart went out to her immediately just because I think being transgender, you have your own obstacles and struggles in your social life within your own community, but to have this be national, international coverage and to have her be moving towards a prison system, which is very unjust to many transgender individuals, I just wanted to send positive thoughts her way on that.
Deirdre McCloskey, I mean, talk about thunderous events in an individual's life all coming at once. I mean, first the leaks and then the long imprisonment and then the trial, 35-year sentence, and at the same time, really coming out to the world as Bradley, now Chelsea Manning. What a confluence in an individual's life, almost unimaginable.
Yeah, it's scary on the other side. But after you've been through it, it's the greatest experience of your life. And I just hope that she has a chance to go through it. It's only just. It's a matter of equality. I was able to. Why shouldn't she?
Ryan, when did you know that this might be a path you wanted to follow? When did you decide to take this path of changing your public expression of gender identity?
I knew that I was transgender when I was 25 years old. However, I had a sense of being assigned the wrong gender around age 2 and a half. I was outside with my family. We had an underground swimming pool. And I saw my dad and my brother in their swimming trunks and my mom and my sister in their swimming suits. And I had a little two-piece bathing suit on. So I just took the top part off so I could have swimming trunks like my dad and my brother. And that feeling of being a boy continued as I was a child, but then was suppressed when I moved into puberty. And growing up in rural Nebraska, we didn't see any coverage on transgender issues at that time, especially in the 80s. So I stuffed it down. Until finally, when I was 25, I found a book called The Body Alchemy by Lauren Cameron that helped me understand who I was.
And Deirdre, what about you, your path?
Well, my first strong feelings of this was when I was 11 years old, but that was in 1953. And yeah. In 1953, there wasn't a lot that could be done. So I just decided to be a guy, and I played. I was the captain of my high school football team, and I found my wife, who I still love, and was married to her for 30 years. And at age 53, I decided to indulge my minor hobby of cross-dressing from time to time a little more. And then on an August day, it suddenly hit me that I could change and would. From that day forward, I've had not a moment of doubt.
You know, I mean, to both of you, I want to put, for an awful lot of people, gender identity is a kind of fundamental anchor identity. So it must be, I'm sure you found people who were disconcerted, maybe deeply disconcerted by your decisions. And Ryan, let me bring it to you. What's the range of responses you found to your decision? What was the predominant response and what was the range?
I would say that predominantly the response has been extremely positive. And again, I travel the nation and share my story with universities of all sizes, and the audiences have always been receptive and appreciative of learning more about what gender is and what sexuality is. I can also say some negative aspects. I was protested by the Westboro Baptist Church back in 2009 at a college. However, the counter-protesters did raise over $1,000 that they gave to the Matthew Shepard Erase the Hate Foundation, which was amazing. And struggles with family, feeling disowned by my parents for a little over 6 months, feeling that I wasn't lovable, that I would never be good enough. I think trying to deal with that, not having the people that nurtured you your whole life be there for you, was the hardest struggle.
Deirdre, what about you? The people around you and how they responded to your dramatic choice?
Well, on the whole, the response was very good. Men started to hold the door open for me, and my dean at the time said, "Boy, this is great for our affirmative action program.
Yeah.
Up one, down
woman, right there. Right.
Another. That's right. Boy, that's great."
Yeah.
So it was mainly that. The only bad news in my transition is that my marriage family, my former wife and my two children, haven't spoken to me since 1995. And that's hard. I have three grandchildren I've not ever seen. But into each life some rain must fall. And I'm blessed to be in a society that can handle it. A society that's changed a lot, thanks to people like Oprah and others who have opened up the society.
I mean, I hear that, and I hear your ease in that world. Yet, that's a lot of rain to fall to lose your marriage, family, and your children. What was that about?
Like
was it betrayed? They felt betrayed, or
It's a little hard to say. They haven't spoken to me, as I said, for a long, long time. I reach out to them from time to time. I just learned I had my third grandchildren accidentally on the internet a few months ago. At first, it was like being stabbed and having the knife turned in the wound. But, you know, people can adjust. Ryan and I adjusted for a long time to our assigned gender.
Assigned from birth, that is.
Assigned from birth. Mm-hmm. And it's how people are. They're very flexible. It's true that gender is very fundamental. And any deviation from it makes people very nervous.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. As Chelsea Manning, formerly Bradley Manning, has been all over the news, we are talking this hour with transgender Americans about their lives. Deirdre McCloskey is with us, born Donald McCloskey, made the shift at age 53. Ryan K. Salins is with us from Omaha, born Kimberly Ann Salins, at age 25, made the change to Ryan K. Salins. Deirdre and Ryan, if I may, I want to bring one more voice into our conversation right now. Andrew Solomon joins us from New York, celebrated author, journalist, big thinker, gay rights activist, not transgender. His latest book is Far From the Tree, Parents, Children, and the Search for Identity. We had a wonderful conversation with him about that work a few months back. Andrew Solomon, thank you very much for joining us today.
What a pleasure to be here.
You wrote in your book, Far From the Tree, about all kinds of situations in which children are seen as somehow quite unlike their parents. I mean, you wrote about deaf kids and Down syndrome kids and autistic kids, and you wrote about transgender people. From the time you spent paying attention to that, thinking about it, what do we know about where this comes from?
Where it comes from is still very difficult to say. Norm Spack, who's one of the leading endocrinologists working in this field, mm-hmm. said to me once, our images of the Earth right now are like those first photographs taken from the moon of our planet. Mm. He said, the understanding of the brain is like that. We can see the weather systems. We can see the big things that are moving around. He said, when we can read the license plates, we'll know what causes gender identity disorder. But I think there's an understanding now that it can perhaps be triggered by hormonal events in utero. There is research going on, none of which has shown anything very specific as to whether there is a genetic basis for it. Doctors in the field have pointed out that there are several hundred genes that are involved in how we express ourselves in gender, our masculinity or our femininity, and that almost any of them could perhaps be altered or be unusual in some way that could cause this. But the real answer is that we have a lot of theories and nobody knows what causes this. We only know that it exists, that it's profound, that it's true, and that for people who are genuinely trans to have to live in the gender they were assigned at birth is traumatic.
As a gay American, Andrew, do you see transgender Americans as related to you in terms of sexuality, or is this a different category? I mean, it's right in there, LGBT, it's in the acronym, but do you see them as fundamentally related or not?
Well, it's in the acronym, but it's its own letter within mm-hmm, the acronym.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I think that there has been a political imperative to include trans people in the fight for gay rights because the numbers of gay people are greater than the numbers of trans people. But I also think that a lot of gay people who have experienced bullying and abuse have experienced those things not because of who they have sex with, but because they don't conform to gender stereotypes. And so, well, I think people who are trans have a very different identity. Essentially, your gender identity is who you are, and your sexuality is who you bounce it off of, and those are two different things. Mm. There is nonetheless the sense that because many gay people have been bullied, boys for being effeminate or girls for being too masculine, because that has existed, that there is a kind of continuum in terms of the political issue that needs to be resolved. Mm-hmm. But the lived experience is different. And, of course, trans people can be either gay or straight in the gender to which they
mm-hmm.
switch.
Mm-hmm. Deirdre Ryan, you must have thought a lot about the origins of this reality in your own lives. Ryan, how have you come to understand it? I don't know, either, you know, physically or mentally or psychologically or hormonally. How do you think about the origins of this? You were assigned a gender at birth, no doubt, on the basis of what people saw and believed. It turns out not to work for you. What's the origin of that, do you think, Ryan?
Well, I agree with Andrew that there are a lot of theories, and we don't have mm-hmm. a pinpoint. We can't give the root cause, even though I do really lean towards prenatal development and hormones for lots of things that affect who we are, not just our gender identity, mm-hmm. but also yep. our sexual orientation and other aspects of who we are. And I think it's important for us to understand that we oftentimes get confused because we use the word gender and the word sex as the same thing when they're two different. So biological sex is what the doctors are looking at when they assign mm-hmm. our then gender identity. Mm-hmm. And those are two different areas.
Deirdre, how do you understand the origins of this reality that you've wrestled with and made your way with?
Well, I think that Andrew and Ryan have it right. It's very deep. Jung, the great psychologist, speaks of the animus and the anima, the masculine and the feminine interiors that we all have. Mm-hmm. You have your mom inside you. I have my mom and my dad and my uncles and so on inside of me. And what you're allowed to express and what you emphasize are to some degree at choice, but I think underneath it all, it's probably biological.
I want to turn to our
interesting.
Yes, Andrew, please.
Sorry, I was just going to say it's interesting to note that there's a synthetic estrogen called diethyl stilbestrol, which was developed in the 1930s and used to prevent miscarriage.
Okay.
And at one point, someone decided to do a study of the children who had been born to mothers who used that medication and discovered that 50% of them were transgender.
Wow.
So I don't think that proves that all of people's being transgender is a result of androgen levels in utero. But it does indicate that by changing the estrogen levels in utero, you can have this profound effect on people's development, and many of them will be shifted by that early exposure.
Interesting. Deirdre, I hear you there on this.
Yes. That sounds plausible. As I say, I was born in 1942. My mom, who says, don't do anything more interesting than changing gender. And I think that's very wise. I'll have to ask
her. That'll be quite enough, dude.
I'll ask her if she had any of these hormones.
Yeah. Let's go to our listeners. Sean in Guilford, Connecticut. Sean, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
So I just wanted to share my experience. And when I was a young child, I've grown up with a transgender uncle who is now an aunt, and I do refer to her as a female.
Yep.
Because I've gone through this experience with her, if you will, as a small child, and I have a very vivid memory of being 3 or 4 years old. My uncle came into the house and basically saved me from a snake. There was, you know, probably a gardener snake. I don't remember what type
right.
of snake, but
okay.
he came in and he got that snake and he was, you know, the strongest man in the world.
Yeah.
I subsequently moved to California, grew up a bit, came back to this area through my pubescent years and through 12 to, you know, my age now, I'm in my mid-30s.
Yeah.
I saw him going through this process of hormones and growing his hair and dating men and dressing as a woman and listening to my father and my uncles ridicule him and struggling at that time with, you know, my puberty and my sexual identity, him trying to correct me when I'm misbehaving as I was a bit of a rebellious youth. I was angry, you know, and I went through all of these emotions. You know, he let me down, you know, not this strong person I thought he was, you know, he's weak somehow or this and that. And then as I got a bit older and matured, had a family of my own, you know, went through all these different changes in my life, I started having conversations with my mother about my aunt. And she explained to me that when she was young and she is her older sister.
Right.
He would wear her dresses as a youth. Mm-hmm. And this is in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I started to think about this and I thought, well, geez, maybe it isn't his fault. You know, maybe this is who he is. And I came to accept it and respect it. And, you know, I've watched it all. You know, I've seen my family shun him. His parents won't speak to him. His mother died and he wasn't allowed at the funeral. You know, and it's horrible to me. You know, it makes me feel bad being, you know, in this younger generation.
Yeah.
Not that I'm, you know, in the 20s, but it's still, you know, it's acceptable to us now. So
hey, Sean, let me ask you, when your uncles, brothers, your dad and your other uncles ridiculed him, was it serious ridicule? Was it good natured? Did it evolve over time into acceptance or not?
No, not at all. It was serious ridicule. You know, oh yeah, oh this blah blah blah. You know, this guy thinks, oh yeah, okay. You know, like stuff like that. Like,
yeah,
you know, I don't want to get into the, you know, vulgar details, but it was serious. I mean, his brothers hate him.
Wow.
His father won't speak to him.
It's
my mother and my aunt speak to him.
Yeah,
but not that much.
It's a tall hill to climb for many people. Sean, I really appreciate that story. Andrew, you looked at a lot of challenging realities, circumstances, different kinds of difference in this world and how people respond to them. What about transgender as a category of difference and the responses that it elicits from people who aren't familiar or aren't inside that world?
The level of hatred that gets directed against trans people is absolutely shocking, and it's almost unimaginable until you've gone out into that world and witnessed it. Since 1999, more than 400 trans people have been murdered in the U.S. in hate crimes. And within families, there's often the story that we've heard from Deirdre and that we've just heard from Sean of families rejecting their own children. A lot of the time, the people who are transitioning know that if they actually come out and make this transition, they may lose everyone and everything. And it's a kind of bizarre cruelty because the behaviors that we are so negative about are behaviors that would be perfectly acceptable in someone of the other gender. So the idea that women are allowed to wear dresses and men aren't allowed to wear dresses and that we have to keep that division rigidly enforced is an incredibly oppressive one, and it causes an enormous, enormous amount of suffering.
Why such virulent rejection around this particular reality, do you think, Andrew? You've looked at so many.
I think that a lot of people are insecure in their own sense of gender and that this kind of disruption is very threatening to them. I think that the same prejudice that's led to a lot of homophobia, some of it religiously based, is in operation. But I also think that there are a lot of people who nurture feelings of real cruelty toward others who seem incredibly vulnerable, and that trans people are really enormously vulnerable. They've gone out on a limb. They've bravely expressed who they are. Other people are very disconcerted by it, and it makes them enraged and angry and destructive.
Deirdre McCluskey, reading the literature here, it seems that male-to-female transgender people are at the greatest risk of that kind of even violent rejection.
Yes.
Have you experienced that? Have you seen it? How have you defended yourself from it?
Well, I myself haven't experienced violence. I'm a college professor, and the most violent we are in my environment is saying something unpleasant about your last book.
Yeah.
I've known people, even in Holland, which is very tolerant in these matters,
yes.
I had an acquaintance, a not very passable gender crosser, who had been assaulted. I mean, seriously assaulted 4 times. So I think Andrew is right. It arouses this tremendous anxiety, particularly in men. Then in women, if they see you as a man in a dress, they view you as, oh God, another one of those weird men doing something strange. And then you're rejected by the gender you want to join, and that is very painful.
Do you have friends who have accepted you as a female friend?
I have lots and lots of female friends in my church. By the way, the Bible doesn't say anything about gender crossing. Let's get that straight. But I have a wide variety of female friends.
Yeah.
So I'm completely accepted as a church lady.
Church lady. Ryan, we haven't met, but I'm looking at your photograph here. I mean, you're kind of a studly guy. You got a big beard and muscular here. What about your acceptance in or lack thereof in day-to-day life? What works well? What's difficult?
Well, historically, people that are F to M or born assigned female and transition to male do experience less violence than people that transition to male to female. Mm-hmm. Even this past week, we saw, I think, 3 or 4 trans women of color that have been murdered across the nation just in the past week.
Wow.
It is horrendous. So I have not experienced any violence in my life or being out public speaker walking around town. I mean, the worst that I have ever received was someone yelling out the word queer as I was hanging out with one of my buddies downtown. And that's the worst of experience, because most people would never assume I was transgender. They would just assume I'm gay because I am a little bit more feminine in some of my body language and my voice inflection.
And do you have guy friends, buddy kind of guy friends, straight hetero guy friends who are at ease and just buddies?
Well, the beautiful thing, and one of the reasons why I share my story, is because when you get to know people, mm-hmm. and just know people and get past the labels, get past calling someone transgender,
true.
And just meet me as Ryan, that fear goes away because you understand this is who this person is. In fact, if I were to transition back to female, it would be horrendous. It would not work well at all. You know, this is who I am. And so whoever I hang out with, we get along because I'm a caring human being that wants authentic relationships with other people.
Andrew, more people are doing this. Not a great number. It's still a tiny minority of the population, but more than before. Why do you think that is?
I think there are several reasons. One is that I think the procedures that are available to people who are trans are increasing vastly. So if you were trans in the 1950s, surgery had been invented, but it wasn't very advanced. Our understanding of the hormones wasn't so advanced. We didn't at all have the puberty blockers that are now used for children who are growing up and who are trans to prevent them from going through the puberty of their natal gender. There just wasn't as much that could be done about it. But additionally, I think there wasn't as much acceptance from the society at large. And despite these terrible stories of rejection, acceptance is increasing and people are able to have more and more dignified lives as trans people.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. As Chelsea Manning, formerly Bradley Manning, has been all over the news, we're talking with transgender Americans about their lives in this hour. Ryan K. Salins is with us from Omaha, Nebraska. He was 25 when he went from Kimberly Ann to Ryan, female to male. Deirdre McCloskey is with us from Chicago, was 53 when she went from Donald to Deirdre. Deirdre wrote about it in her memoir, Crossing. Ryan has written about it in his second son. Andrew Solomon is also with us, author and journalist, big thinker, out with a terrific book that we've talked about on the show called Far From the Tree, Parents, Children, and the Search for Identity. He joins us from New York. Let's go to Madison, Wisconsin, and Doreen. Doreen, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
You're welcome. Hi, Tom and everyone. My daughter, when she was 13, confided in me that she was a lesbian, and it was not a great surprise. And while it was emotional, it was not this horrific thing. I thought society mm-hmm. has accepted people like lesbians and all. Well, last year at 18, to my shock, she came back to me and actually said that she'd figured out she's transgender. Now that, I just apparently said the right things, because she's my daughter and or son no matter what, and I love her, and someone said she's the same person. But I didn't even know what that meant, really, and mm-hmm. through learning about it quickly, I figured it out. since then she's had top surgery and started hormones, and I have to say that it absolutely freaked me out, mostly because of how society I've come to learn deals with it. She's already, or he at this point,
yes.
He's been threatened through cross-country trips, north and south, especially the south, even though it's male to female to male.
Mm-hmm.
I worry about this hormone therapy and the side effects. Right now, only my immediate family knows, and I don't know how the rest would accept it. Some are very religious. My son has accepted it because he loves his sibling,
yeah.
But he feels it's very selfish. He thinks, well, let's say you were white and going to become black or Chinese or something.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to accept it. So that's his standpoint, even though I've, you know, said, no, we have to be a family. And now he's headed off to college with a male roommate, and I just think, oh, my goodness, how is it all going to work? So that's what worries me.
You've got a lot on your plate, Dylan.
Yeah. And I have to say that I love the book Far From the Tree, and I have four categories for my three children. We have a lot of farm.
Life can throw a lot at us. Would you be good enough to share with us in your conversation with your daughter, now son, you must have come to a point where you really wanted to get down. You know, you must have been asking, because you care, you clearly love your daughter now, your son. Were you entirely persuaded that this was authentic, correct, that this was this would be the path to the true identity for your child?
Yes. Well, I struggle with that just silently because in the course of it, I just stayed up 24/7 reading, and what really I think was most compelling was the fact, the statistics aren't quite right, but I think something like 40% of transgender people attempt suicide. And I also just decided, I think, if my son now came to me to tell me this, I had to believe that he'd been thinking about this for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
I quickly went to a therapist who specializes in this to find out how I could support him.
Mm-hmm.
I went with him to do the top surgery. But yes, in the back of my mind, I thought, oh my gosh, am I enabling him maybe? I didn't think this was a little quick decision, but it had,
yeah.
It made me pause and did I somehow, by being open to it, make him feel more comfortable doing it? But I think in the end, I just decided, no, he's 18 already. And there'd been so many signs through his whole life. When he was younger and
that you knew as the mother. Yeah.
Underwear.
Doreen, you sound like a absolutely wonderful, loving mother. You read Andrew Solomon and admired that. He's with us here. So let's go to this. Andrew, you wrote, and Doreen, I'm sure, read this in your book, but you say that according to you here, I know that at 12, you wrote, I'd have chosen to be a woman if it had been easy and complete transformation. You went on to write, Andrew, that you're ultimately glad you didn't. But here's Doreen. This is right in her family's lap. Speak to her moment and struggle.
Well, I think I had the sense that it would be more acceptable to be a woman than it was to be gay. And I knew that some of my interests were not characteristically masculine interests.
Mm-hmm.
And I was curious about what all of that meant. But I never really believed that I was a woman. I never felt that my life was going to be blighted if I couldn't live as a woman. I didn't have that mm-hmm. driving need. Now, there's always the question when one is looking especially at children who are expressing cross-gender identity. There are some of them who will go on to change their minds, who will, for example, be just gay. And there are some of them who will go on to transition. And it can be difficult with very young children to see which children are which. But I think when you have someone who's 18 and who's made a declaration of who he knows himself to be, that you have to trust and believe that declaration. There are some people who have had transgender surgeries of various kinds and have said they regret it. But there are far more people who have been denied those surgeries and who say that that's the thing that has destroyed their lives.
I mean, we all know that puberty is, not just can be, but is bewildering. More bewildering, I suppose, to some than others. And you hear Doreen, who's still with us, saying, you know, sometimes she wonders if her very openness may have, you know, put more sort of play in the system that allowed for more, I don't know, confusion or range. I mean, we encourage openness, but then she's got this little twinge of fear that, you know, maybe that very openness encouraged something that her daughter may not have needed.
Well, in the first place, I think that's highly unlikely. Mm-hmm. But I would add that parenting really involves two things. It involves love, which is hopefully there unconditionally from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And it involves acceptance, which is generally a struggle at some level. And that parents who have children who are transgender may love those children but have a very hard time accepting them. Nonetheless, that striving toward acceptance is the most nourishing thing those children can have. And I think Doreen sounds like she's been doing a fantastic job of confronting her own anxiety, her own uncertainty, and trying really to listen to her child. And I think that's what one needs to do as a parent.
Doreen, what's your rollout plan for sharing this change in your family with the rest of your extended family?
Oh, boy, that's a really good question. I'm not sure. I think that my first point is just to protect my son now during this delicate transition period. I mean, first he had top surgery, which to me didn't seem as drastic or final as the hormone therapy, but my son gave it some time. I don't know. I mean, I have very difficult relatives who are very religious, and some of them, and I think if worse need be, I will just, I have to just let that go because I don't see acceptance on their part. And I think my son was really and told me many times how he thought I would, be accepting, and my husband too. Mm-hmm. But when we really work, to me, he seems the same child. It meant the world to him. So I can just imagine how scared he was beforehand. And I think luckily there are places in the country where, in the world, where more likelihood of having acceptance and not having your life threatened. But it's just appalling to me as I read more about it, how few rights are protected for transgender people versus homosexuals when it comes to job employment and lots of things. So I'm just going to tread lightly.
Doreen, we feel your deep love as a mother, and we wish your whole family well. Thank you for calling.
Thank you very much, too.
Let me go to Alex in Lunenburg, Massachusetts. Alex, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom and panel. Hi. I would like to start by expressing my profound gratitude for this conversation that's happening right now. The amount of trans erasure that goes on in the LGBTQ community is absolutely abhorrent. I mean, even the HRC, the Human Rights Campaign, believes that the biggest struggle that we face as a community is marriage equality. And that it's just outrageous to me. But
what's your situation, Alex?
On to my main point, I recently came out as gender fluid, which means I identify as both male and female, and that has thrown many people for a loop because, oh, there's more than just two genders, So far with my friend group, at least, it's been a pretty positive, they've been pretty positive about it because I have a lot of trans and gay friends, and it's worked out well, but everybody else just seems to just kind of laugh it off, you don't really know what you're doing, what you're talking about, you need to make up your mind and that kind of thing, and so it's slowly becoming more real. I'm not just sitting out on the sidelines anymore. I'm really realizing how difficult it is to just be ignored, blatantly ignored for who you are.
But how do you live that life? Let's say that there's a range of gender identity, but you range across the range. You know, so much of our lives are structured around, look, Deirdre and Ryan have changed their gender, but at least, I mean, they have a fixed gender now. How do you live life without the structure of with gender fluidity? How do you do it, Alex?
Well, I guess the biggest thing is I've never really had a fixed gender. I'm just finally expressing that sentiment. I have a biologically male body, as you can probably tell by my voice.
Yep.
But I have different days. Some days I'll feel more feminine. Some days I'll feel more masculine. And I'll do my hair differently. I'll wear different clothes that are more feminine when I'm on more of a feminine day. I'll act a little bit more, quote unquote feminine, just to kind of express how I'm feeling that specific day, just because it does make me feel more comfortable. I don't feel like I'm hiding anything or, trying to be something that I'm not just for the sake of, an easy flowing life. And as many problems as I have faced, obviously, this is nowhere as extreme. I'm not trying to compare myself to a transgender individual and their struggles, but the amount of problems that I've faced have been much less than the personal comfort and freedom that it's granted me to finally face this this thing that's been going on inside of me.
Yeah, Alex, I appreciate your call. Ryan, as you listen to that, was that ever an option for you? Here's a gender fluid caller right across the whole range. Or did you no, I'm male. I just happened to be, you know, given the wrong ID at birth. When you hear about gender fluidity, does it sound like something that might have appealed to you, Ryan?
Well, it's important for us to understand that the word transgender has actually become the umbrella term for the transgender community. So there's several different identities that fall under that.
Yep.
Myself being FDM or trans man is one of them. For Deidre being M to F or trans woman. For Alex being gender fluid. Those are very real identities within the community. I can say that for about 2 minutes at the beginning of my transition, I thought maybe I was gender queer. And the reason why I thought
that is...
Is that another category? Yes, it is.
Meaning so, what exactly?
I didn't want to have my gender defined as male or female.
Is that the same as gender fluid?
Well, it depends on who you ask and how one identifies, because even with the language, different people have different ways of describing it. Gender fluid is showing more of that fluidity amongst gender. With gender queer, for me, it was I didn't want my gender defined. I didn't want male or female, masculine, feminine, strictly defined. So for about 2 minutes, I thought maybe I was genderqueer, but really what was going on there is I was partnered with a woman who was identified – who identifies as a lesbian. And so I was
fearful – This is when you were still female.
Yes. So when I was starting to begin my transition. So I was fearful that if I stated my – for myself, my true identity of being a trans man, that I would lose my relationship.
And what happened in the event ultimately with that?
Well – I transitioned fully to male, and my girlfriend and I stayed together for a little over 6 years, actually. We grew a lot together. We struggled a lot together, but ultimately we found that although we were good friends, we weren't meant to be romantic partners, and we parted ways.
Deirdre, I can imagine people listening to this conversation with all of its range and the very palpable tolerance that all of you bring to it. But I can imagine people listening and just feeling, you know, freaked out, like, oh, my gosh, there's no structure. Everything's flying apart. You know, F to M, M to F, gender fluid. You know, you could – a person could get in a tizzy about this.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't think we should indulge people's feelings of being freaked out. You know, we were once freaked out by white people holding hands with black people.
Yeah.
We were once freaked out by if you insulted an aristocrat. Yes. I mean, freaking out is not an appropriate reaction to this. And as I said before, there isn't anything in religion that says that you have to be angry about gender change, and it's not a matter of understanding it or not. I mean, it's not a mathematical theorem. It's a taste. I mean, I like chocolate ice cream, but I can't tell you why I like chocolate ice cream.
Right.
There's no theorem about it, and it is, by the way, extremely few gender crossers who regret their change, and I mean it's extremely few. And surprising as it sounds, it's reversible. If I were to decide to go back to being a man, what a horrible thought! I could start taking, say, male hormones again, and in six months I'd be acting like a man.
And
I've got I'm still tall like I was.
Yeah, sure. So the choice is there. Andrew Solomon, if we are evolving in this country, in this culture, toward more acceptance, and here maybe to some a lot more acceptance, but okay, there it is. Evolving to what? What kind of what's the end state of this evolution of tolerance?
I think really the goal has to be to have a society in which we allow people to define themselves. We allow people to define themselves religiously. We allow people to define themselves in terms of their gender. We allow people to define themselves in a thousand other ways. And our job is mostly to accept them. I'll read you a quick quote from one of the trans women I interviewed, Jennifer Finney Boylan, who described how the love of my family didn't keep me a boy, but it gave me the courage to know if I did come out, it would be okay. Love didn't enable me to stay a man. It was love that enabled me finally to tell the truth.
Well, on a day when there's a lot of talk about freedom in the air, here's another strand. I'm grateful to all three of you for helping us consider it. Andrew Solomon, author of Far From the Tree. Thank you very much for being with us today, Andrew.
Thank you.
Ryan K. Salins in Omaha, Nebraska, author of Second Son, Transitioning Toward My Destiny, Love and Life. Ryan, thank you and good luck.
Thank you, Tom.
And Deirdre McCloskey, author of Crossing. Thank you, Deirdre.
I've enjoyed it, dear.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.